72 games down, 16 wins to go. The road to an NBA championship runs through Philly, and the playoffs begin this weekend. This is a special Beers with Bob, Sixers playoff preview edition, with your host Bob Cooney and special guest host Devon Gibbons.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Beers with Bob, Devon Gibbons. Bob Cooney here. Special Sixers preview. We got Tyler Zuli behind the glass doing what he does. But Devon, it's here. 16 wins. Can they get it?
It is finally here. Can they get it?
Well, we want
Can they get it?
That is the question. We thank you for joining us on another. This is a special episode of Beers with Bob. We got the great Devon Gibbons in here. You know it's basketball season when they're pairing the two of us.
Oh, no doubt about it. I'm thrilled, man.
Otherwise, they try to separate
us. They do separate us, but far too often.
Yeah.
Far too often.
Yeah, but we cried and we bitched and we moaned enough that the powers that be gave in. So, yeah, we're with you with their first special 2 hours tonight. 2 hours, Beers with Bob. At 6:30, we're going to talk to Tyrone Johnson. He's going to give us a call. We'll go over all the different things that are going on with the Sixers. They had on Doc Rivers today on the Mike Missanelli show. Some interesting things there that we heard. 7 o'clock, D-Line will join us. And then at 7:30, Crystal Rich will join us. So Crystal and Tyrone, both from Sixers Outsiders on NBC Sports Philly. And, of course, D-Line had covered the Sixers for many, many, many a year with Devon and I down at the Wells Fargo Center and all over the country. So we got a great show, just jam-packed for you tonight. Devon, how you feeling?
I'm glad that it's finally here. It's Wednesday, and even with them playing on Sunday, we knew their fate on Friday after they clinched everything in the number one overall seed. It has been a long few days, and we still have quite a few days left in between until we get our first look at the playoff Sixers, led by Doc Rivers, but I'm excited. I think they have a really good chance to make some noise in the postseason. Everyone has talked about how clear the path is. I've frustrated some people with what I believe right as of today.
You frustrated people?
Yeah, just because I said Brooklyn right now is the better team as it stands today, which could change by the time we get to July. But, I mean, listen, that's what we're here for, to give our analysis on what we see from these teams, what teams will give them the most problems, what may not, who may not. So there are some things, clearly, that we're going to talk about here in these next 2 hours, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. And it's funny, you say that, you know, it's been since Friday, since they clinched, so we've known for a while. But if you want to talk reality, we knew long before then, too.
Yes, we did.
I mean, it was a foregone conclusion. They were going to get it done. They were going to be the number one seed. Here's where I want to start off to you, and again, we want to thank you for joining us on Beers with Bob, and we do it every Wednesday. Usually we're 6 to 7, special edition tonight with Devon Gibbons, 6 to 8.
Do we get the glass?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, so okay. All we ask you to do is, and tonight we ask you to do it for 2 hours. So have someone join you. It's not just the hour of sitting back and grabbing a cocktail tonight. It's 2 hours. So be careful. Don't go anywhere. If you decide to go to the refrigerator maybe once in a, you know, too often, just stay home, relax, but we ask you to sit back. And like my parents, Devon, did every day on this day, we say to you, Happy Wednesday. And there it is. That's where we get started.
Sounds good.
So, Devon, my biggest thing going down the stretch here, and you put it perfectly, that we just knew what was going to happen for a long time. So, Doc Rivers is on with Mike Missanelli today and basically said, look, the last probably 12 games of the season, we played bad teams. He said, I'm not going to lie, we played bad teams. My whole thing was, during that time, they needed to extract something from every game, mm-hmm. whether it be a good 20-minute run concentrating on one thing or another thing or the bench or this. Do you think they got enough of that down the stretch? Where is your confidence level with this team right now as they do enter the playoffs?
I'm sure they found some things in that run somewhere. Somehow they found something within those games that you're talking about. Individual play, like I've talked to you guys on the morning show when you had me on as a guest, highlighting what Tyrese Maxey has done so far with his minutes being, you know, able to, you know, pick up a little bit because Doc Rivers just feels like he's comfortable with him again. He's back in the rotation. So I think he's found something there. Will he do something with it in the postseason? We'll find out. And he mentioned to Mike, as you pointed out, about how he wants to go about his rotation, something I'm sure we'll discuss. But I don't think they did enough, and that's why I'm glad that they were done when they were done on Friday. They have practice time all week long. Not that everything will be answered in that 1 week of practice, because you still do have to go against the opponents, some other bodies, to see what they're going to do to try to stop you from doing the things that you feel like you are doing very well. So I think with all due respect to whoever the first round opponent is between Washington and Indiana, it's a tune-up for what's to come later on. And that, too, outside of the practice that they're going to get all week, figuring those things out that you alluded to, but now going into the postseason, that round one, where they're gonna go at you because you're the hunted now, and they are hanging on by a string by just getting in. They're going to want to play their best basketball, Indiana or Washington, and they're going to give you a run. They're going to give you a run. So sure. I think that that's what their tune-up will be, to answer any of those questions at very early on. And then, of course, when they get to the second round, better opponent, but still the Sixers are the better team, and they can still do those things that you're speaking of. And that's where I really believe that no longer are you playing those bad teams. You're playing better opponents, and you can get those things and extract it from those contests.
Yeah, and one of the things Doc Rivers said today about the way the practice schedule is going. So they practiced on Tuesday. They practiced today. He said they practiced hard yesterday. They practiced today working on transition defense, which has been a thorn in their side all year.
One of my keys to the game a lot.
Exactly.
Stop them.
And that's so easily fixable. It's habit.
Mm-hmm.
It's habit forming. It's bad habit forming. Mm-hmm. It's your first step after a missed shot. It's holding on to a follow through too long after you shoot.
Watching.
It's watching. Exactly. It's guys that shouldn't be trying to offensive rebound. You know, you need to have a set, guys. Look, you get back. I don't care where you are. As soon as that shot's taken, you're running back. It's just like, you know, when you're a little kid. You're not rebounding, Cooney. You're 5'10". Devon, you're not rebounding. You're 5'10".
Get back.
Get back on defense. And I'm sure Doc was wearing a get back shirt today. That just every time. So the really cool thing that he talked about, Devon, where I think the Sixers have an advantage in this, is that he said he's taken these first two practices to really concentrate on tightening things up. There's things that they needed to work on. He said they played bad teams and got into some bad habits. He said we fixed that up. We tightened up the ship. And the last thing we had to fix, this is what he said, the last thing we had to fix defensively was transition defense, and I guarantee you it's fixed. So you have 2 days of that, 2 days of tuning your team. Now you take tomorrow off, you find out who your opponent is.
Exactly.
And then you have 2 days, according to Doc, Friday and Saturday, to plan for that team you're playing. So they're in a really, really good spot of getting this practice time when they haven't had it, being a really good team that you tighten up some spots that may have gotten a little loose, and now you get the scouting report on the team you're going against and implementing a game plan.
I was just about to go there. You already have the scouts scouting the team that you could possibly be playing. They're already doing that. You're just waiting to find out who it is going to be exactly after tomorrow night's game. So you're right. Do the other things that you need to tighten up on that have been a problem for you all season long. And then when you know who the opponent is, that's when you now start to install all the things that you do. Take the scouting report from the scouts that you have for Washington or Indiana, and let's get right at it. Go back to the film that you had earlier in the season. Look at some of the things that you've done well. Look at the things that you didn't do so well. Bradley Beal dropped 60 on you. How are you going to stop that? Right? How are you going to, how are you going to make up for what happened in Indiana when they blew you out last Tuesday when you were supposed to be locking in that number one overall seed? Some of those things, that nothing has been perfect. This is a whole new season. You just happen to be number one at the top, but the record is the same. So there are some things that have to be tightened up in order for this team to make the run that we're talking about. So the practice schedule is perfect. George Hill has an opportunity to really dive into whatever they need to do as far as the overall install that they have offensively. He did a lot of generic things just being George Hill.
Yes.
Being in the league for so long, understanding what simple pick and roll is, and come and set a screen for me. I'll call you, you call me, we'll do whatever we need to do. And now he gets to really do those things. So the times where you talk about, I want to see George Hill on the floor with Ben Simmons, we might see it now because they have some actual minutes played in practice to do that, where it could be a positive thing for this team in the long run.
Yeah. The big thing I wanted to ask you in this first segment about these upcoming playoffs, your confidence level, let's wrap this up first. Your confidence level in this team right now, I guess it grows because of the practice and what we just talked about, because they had this week, not so much from the last 10 games of the season. Even though they won 8 in a row, then they lost a couple, then they won the clinch, and the last game meant nothing. But I didn't have a great feeling about, not a bad feeling, but I didn't have a great feeling coming out of those final 10 games. They won 8 or 11 games, whatever it was, because they really didn't play anybody. They really didn't get anything out of it like I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel more confident, though, that they have this week of practice. I think you go into this playoff, in my opinion, at a pretty high level. My confidence level is good. It's not, I'm not saying they're going here, they're going there, but it's good right now. What's yours?
I was cruising after the 8-game winning streak, frustration with the next two against Indiana and Miami. And I allowed myself to get caught up what was going on in the moment because I want them to be sharp. You talk about it a lot going into the playoffs. So you can make that a 12-game winning streak or at least show me some effort like we talked about in those games after Miami specifically. Yeah. Show the effort. But when they won on Friday against Detroit to finally Orlando when they finally clinched it, I felt better. And that was look, I know they played an opponent that was an inferior opponent, but I just had that feeling again of getting a W. Now this is about to be over. Sunday is going to be what Sunday is going to be, where no one plays and you'll see a lot of the young guys go out there and perform. And then they get after it. And knowing who Doc Rivers is going into the playoffs, hoping that the mindset is there, hearing Danny Green speak about what they need to do, of where they need to be mentally going into these playoffs, what it's about, hearing Dwight Howard speak, and Tobias Harris to a certain extent, because I still need him to show me something in the playoffs after the Toronto series that they had. I do count the bubble because they were terrible. He wasn't good either.
Right.
So my confidence level where I am right now, it came back after they just simply got a win. Now, that's because I know where the field is. I know what the path is, and I know how good they can be. There are questions that need to be answered, but I'm at a very high level right now of confidence with this basketball team.
There's consistencies that have to be met. It has to be with Ben Simmons, consistency, with the Tobias Harris. The bubble with him last year, that was a tough situation. I mean, it was two guys you had to shut down, and they concentrated on Tobias Harris. They didn't shut down Joel Embiid very well. But that just kind of was what it was. But I think the consistency levels that need to be met start with Ben Simmons. And it's just a free-flowing good game. I'm not looking for a point total specifically, a rebound and assist total. I think we all know what we would like them to be and what they should be. And his numbers, and we're going to go over this a little bit later for people that are down on him. I heard a guy call Mike's show today saying, if Ben Simmons doesn't play well in these playoffs, I really think they have to look to ship him. He didn't play in the playoffs last year. They lost 4-0. We'll look at his other games, the 22 other games that he's played for the Sixers so far, and we'll make judgment on that. But I think you brought up the Friday game where they clinched. They're playing a horrible team in Orlando. But I'm a huge boxing fan, Devon. They were on their toes, and they were moving, and they were jabbing, and they were throwing haymakers, and they were on their game. It didn't matter who the opponent was, and it's been my theme for a long time. I want to watch a great team. And it doesn't matter who the opponent is.
You saw their basketball.
That's right.
Not the Orlando Magic. You saw the Sixers basketball.
And you didn't see that against Miami.
Correct.
And that, look, this, it's just who I am. Bad things stick in my mind longer when I'm watching a game than good things do. That's just how I am. That's how I was brought up. And you look to correct them. That Miami game, you can blow it off as one game, whatever it may be. That stuck in my craw because it gave other teams a lesson on, so they doubled only when Joel Embiid put the ball on the floor. Interesting. And Embiid had 5 turnovers and looked horrible. You know, there might have been a lesson learned by other teams there. And that's what you worry about.
That's why I said I was cruising just watching the 8-game winning streak because, okay, yeah, I can see this. You're supposed to do this. When you play against Indiana, who has given you a little trouble, especially in Indiana, go out there and handle your business, especially with what's on the line. They're playing for a playoff position with the play-in. And even with Miami, I said I got caught up in it because I saw what I saw. And I didn't like what I saw, the effort not being there. Once they got punched in the mouth, they didn't respond. And I don't mean physically with the Udonis Haslam stuff and the Trevor Ariza little skirmish that they had between he and Embiid. I mean the fact that they jumped on them and they didn't know how to close out on the three-pointer. They couldn't locate their man when things got a little confusing, and I just didn't like it. And once we got back to, as you mentioned, on the second night of that back-to-back on Friday against Orlando, the opponent being horrible as they are, but still, I saw snap. I saw everything just working the way it was supposed to work. The ball was snapping around the perimeter. They got on them. They jumped on them. They got out in transition, and they looked like themselves.
Right.
Because oftentimes when we would do a question and we say, who are you most concerned about? Milwaukee, Miami, Brooklyn, whoever it is. Oftentimes, Bob, and I know you guys get it on your show, I'm not worried about any of them. I'm worried about the Sixers.
I say it all the time.
And that's where it was.
So all the time.
You beat the Orlando Magic because you're supposed to. But what I saw was I saw the Sixers from what we know about them this season. And that's why I feel the way I feel going into round one, again, against whoever the opponent is. Because if I see the Sixers play Sixers basketball, they're going to be very hard to beat.
Yeah, I totally agree. This is Beers with Bob. I'm Bob Cooney with Devon Givens. And we have to tell you that the 6 o'clock hour is brought to you by Family and Company Jewelers. Visit them on Route 70 in Marlton, New Jersey, or at familyjewelers.com, South Jersey's diamond destination. And we thank FanDuel Sportsbook for sponsoring Beers with Bob, as they always have. They do a great job there. We're not going to get too much into lines tonight and different things like that, because we just have so much playoff basketball to talk about. As Devon has said, the Sixers will open on Sunday. We do not have a time yet. The first things that we saw, it looked like they might be the first game on Sunday.
First game.
And then Tyrone was talking about, I thought on Beers with Mike, that he may have saw something that it might be the second game. So I don't know if the first game's a 3:30. I don't know if the first game's a 12:30. Well, some of the times that I saw, there was a 3:30 time and a 5 o'clock time. They're not going to overlap anything. You're not going to have anything but 2.5 hours between games, at least. So I don't know. It's still up in the air. It looks though they are going to be an afternoon game, and perhaps that number one game of the day, right, Devon?
Yeah, so I just went basically off of what they sent us as far as what the schedule looks like. I know you have the same thing that I have. Tyrone does also, where it has East 8 versus Philadelphia, all of them being game one, but they have them in front of Atlanta in New York, West 7 in Phoenix, West 8 in Utah. And that's why I went with, I think they'll be the first game. Based on where it is,
right?
Like you said, 12:30,
right?
That's going to be what it is. 12:30 for me, if that's how it all plays out for the 76ers.
Plan it out like it's an Eagles Sunday, folks.
Yep.
Yourselves ready. All right, Devon, here's another question I want to throw at you. And this is a big one. Usually when a playoff team makes a run and does well, whether they're a 1 seed, a 2 seed, whatever it is, they have a theme about them in the playoffs. You say, oh man, you know why Miami got that far? Because Jimmy Butler did, because their defense, because Eric Spoelstra did this. If the Sixers are to make some kind of a run, what needs to be the theme of this team?
Outside of the obvious with Embiid?
You can go wherever you want. You could say Embiid,
I think that one's easy. So I would say it would have to be where we oftentimes talk about the Memphis Grizzlies and what they do, or how they grit and grind. They win with their defense. The Sixers' defense, to your point of Doc Rivers tuning up their transition defense, they're going to have to live and die with their defense, with how they do things. Their defense, it's the thing we always hear, defense leading to offense. That's what they need to do. Their defense needs to be sharp. It needs to be nasty. That's why you have Embiid and Simmons always being talked about as all defensive players, and of course defensive player of the year, the Danny Green conversation in the starting lineup with them, the improved play at least of sliding his feet, not using his hands as much with Tobias Harris, and then we know who Matisse Thybulle is coming off the bench with Dwight Howard in that mix as well, and you might as well include George Hill as a veteran player understanding what playoff defense is about. So I think it is really about hammering it in as to, we are going to win with defense. And that's what my theme is for the Sixers and their playoff run, especially if they get to the Eastern Conference Finals and their opponent is the Milwaukee Bucks or the Brooklyn Nets. They're going to have to hang on what their defense is and win those games with it.
Yeah, and you made a great point real quickly. You said their defense is going to lead to so much of their offense. When George Hill and Seth Curry are at their worst, it's when this team isn't running. Because they're not doing anything in a half-court offense. Seth can do a little something creating. Danny Green standing in the corner in a half-court offense isn't beneficial to you. When they get out and run, you know this well, when they get out and run and those guys can run and pick their spots and flare, but get to... Did you ever notice Danny Green never, ever... When they're out on a run, he is always dead set ready to shoot.
You see his hands.
And he's usually wide open.
After he's done swimming, while he's running...
He does run funny, man.
He gets to his spot, and even when he's about 2 feet behind the three-point line, and you're like, no, you're too far, you're squared up, but your body is not right, his hands are shot ready.
Yep.
And he catches it, he rises up, and he goes. Even when he's leaning forward, he's still taking a Danny Green-level shot.
Exactly.
I totally agree with you.
And my point being, because he can get out and run, and teams have to now find him and get that, he finds the open spot as well as anyone I've ever seen. And usually it's in the corner, and he's the best three-point shooter in the league from the corner. It's amazing when they run how more effective Danny Green especially and Seth Curry are. So that's a key to their defense. You can't run when you're taking the ball out of the basket, as you very well know. Defensively, you get stops, you get rebounds, you can get out and run. Those two become much more effective.
And if he's in the mix, I'm just going to say it, if he's in the mix of that rotation, however Rivers wants to do it, Korkmaz has also done pretty well in his transition threes where he's uncovered, finding a spot. So
you bring up
to throw that one out there.
Well, I'm glad you did. And when we get back at 6:30, we're going to have Tyrone Johnson. And this is what we'll talk about when we do get back with Ty. That rotation. Now, Doc left it wide open when he was on with the Mike Missanelli show today. And I believe we're going to get him on the morning show on the John Kincaid show later on this week, hopefully on Friday. Hmm. And we can expand on some of the things that he said today. But what Doc Rivers said was, look, I don't know where this comes from, going eight deep only in the playoffs. He said, when I won it, no eight. We played a whole bunch of players off the bench. And it's matchups, and it's who's playing well. And he said the great thing about this Sixers team is they're deep. So we'll talk about that with Tyrone when we get back. We thank you once again for joining us. Beers with Bob. I'm Bob Cooney with Devon Givens. We will be here until 8 o'clock tonight. And coming up 6:30, we do have Tyrone Johnson calling in. 7 o'clock, we'll be D-Lineham. And at 7:30, we'll have Crystal Rich. So stay tuned for all of that. Right now, I got to tell you, the play-in tournament gives some teams one last shot to make the playoffs. But everyone can bet this round risk-free on FanDuel Sportsbook in partnership with Valley Forge Casino. It doesn't matter if you're new to FanDuel or already have an account. FanDuel has teamed up with basketball legends Charles Barkley and Kenny Smith to make sure you get your money back if you don't win. That's any user, any bet type, any game. There's so many intriguing matchups in this play-in tournament. You got the best one tonight. I know Devon's going to be glued to it. That's right. LeBron and Steph going at it. The play-in tournament is going down this week, and FanDuel just made it even more exciting. It's all part of FanDuel's Play-in Palooza. So if you already have a sportsbook account, just open the app and opt in to claim your first bet risk-free. And if you're new to FanDuel, sign up with promo code BEER to get your first bet risk-free. That's promo code BEER. You can win up to $1,000 exclusively on FanDuel Sportsbook app. 21 and older and present in Pennsylvania. Refund issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. New user risk-free bet for first real money wager only, and refund issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is Beers with Bob.
Presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. More ways to win.
On 97.5 The Fanatic, Philadelphia.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back. Special Beers with Bob. Bob Cooney, Devon Givens. We are talking Sixers and Sixers only here until 8 o'clock.
Yes.
And then from 8 to 10, of course, you will have the great, the one, the only Devon Givens taking you for the rest of the night.
I'll be here.
Giving you his smooth takes and smoother voice. And right now on the line, we have someone else from the station to talk some Sixers basketball, Sixers playoff. You just heard him on the Mike Missanelli show, and we're lucky enough to have him here. Tyrone Johnson on the line. Ty, what's happening, buddy?
What's going on, fellas? Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, thanks for coming on. Ty, we're going to hit you right away. I know you're driving. You got a lot of things going on. So I'm going to hit you up first. Devon and I were talking at the end of the first segment about maybe this Sixers rotation and where it'll go. And I heard Doc Rivers on the Mike show today talking about that he could go 8, 9, 10, 11 deep if he wanted to because he's so deep. What do you think the rotation is going to look like, and who would you like to see come playoff time?
See, this is interesting because I think it's a sliding projection. I think in the first round, even though I respect the Pacers more than I respect the Wizards, and I think it's going to be the Pacers, I think he will actually play 10 at first. I think you're going to see Hill and Shake and Thibel and Korkmaz and Dwight Howard and maybe even Maxey. I think that's realistic, and I think they would win the series. I'm not about a sweep, win the series with that rotation. And then I think the Knicks, if they're the opponent, they don't score enough. They can probably still afford to do that. When it comes to the time where when they go where I think they're going to go, I think it has to go down to 8, and that's where I wonder if it's just not Hill, Thibel, and Dwight Howard, and if they have to go small, swap somebody out other than Dwight, and just call it good. I don't think he can play 10 the entire time, especially if they're playing the Bucks or the Nets in the conference finals. So I think he'll start. I think he's telling the truth in the beginning, but I don't think he's telling the truth for the playoffs.
Yeah, and Todd, when you look at how you're just playing it out with the 8 and maybe even extended it a little bit in the first round, and one of the guys that you often talk about is Shake Milton, the up-and-down nature of what he's done this season, but an important scorer off the bench, you're going to need that from time to time. So as you've watched him over the second half of the season after the All-Star break, now leading into what we're waiting for, the start of the playoffs this weekend, what do you look at him, at least as scoring-wise, his role overall, if he does, in fact, crack that maybe that ninth guy, definitely that 10 in there for Doc Rivers in the trust level?
You know, that's interesting, Devon, because of the George Hill factor. He's no longer the primary guy. For the bulk of the season, he was the primary ball handler off the bench. That's not the case anymore. And where he was really good last year, even in the playoffs outside of one game in the bubble, he was still pretty good, was just kind of catching and shooting and just playing free. And I think he lost a little bit of that this year for some reason. I don't know if it was the burden of expectations or he was miscast in that particular role, but the shooting struggled, and I think it's because he was trying to do too much. There is a chance, if I'm going to be optimistic, that he can kind of find it again because he has a more simplified role where he can just come off and be aggressive. I hope that's the thing. But it also is a possibility where he could play himself out of the rotation as well. He really could go either way. I hate to say it because Shake's my guy, and he's a guy that I like his game. I like his ability. I like how long he is. But he seemed lost at times, and it could literally go either he's like the main cog off the bench offensively, or it could be he's not getting any minutes.
Ty, if I've heard you say this many times on many different subjects. I don't want to see this. If there's a guy off of that bench that you had to say that about, who would it be? I don't want to see such and such of the guys that we mentioned.
You know, if I'm being completely honest, I don't want to see Korkmaz. And here's why. I do not. I understand the floor spacing capabilities, but I don't believe in them in the playoffs against real defense. I don't believe that when a team hunkers down to play playoff level defense that he can get that shot off. I've seen too many cases, unfortunately, where he can't get that shot off, and his 4-minute stretch just kills you. We know he can get hot, but I just don't trust him. Maybe he proves me wrong, but even in the second round against the Knicks, a team that really does try to defend. Totally different ball game if they're playing Atlanta. Their defensive numbers profile went up, but they don't have the athletes to push this team, and he would still end up with open looks, especially if you mix him in with the starters. I'm talking about as it gets tougher, I just don't trust him to get those shots off. And if he's getting big minutes, that's probably because Maxey and Shake are getting the job done, or Thibel isn't making anything at all, and then the Sixers have problems.
Yeah, and even with me, with him, Korkmaz specifically, guys, I look at it and I say, maybe it's a little easier based on the opponent. If you're looking at Indiana and with Washington, that's where it would serve him well. And maybe those shots being made in that first round would even help him against either New York or Atlanta. Yeah.
Yeah, I can totally buy that. He's such a streaky guy.
Yeah.
It's just that
all you need is, like you said, all you need is a run of him making it where right. It works for him, and maybe it'll carry over because you're not going to ask him to win you a game. You're just going to ask him to do enough to help you win the game.
Right. But in a perfect world for me, I am a guy who, and I could be completely wrong. I want to make that very clear. I always have an obsession with the ability to have a two-way player. And this is where Thibel sometimes is an issue because of his offense on the other side. I just like the ability of being able to say, okay, everybody on my team that I got playing can give you something on offense and can give you something on defense so you can't relax. I also notice too many times in the pick and roll where they pick on them. And then with a bench unit with Dwight Howard behind him, it didn't matter styles. And that's another issue I have with him, a concern, where I don't know if he's grown enough on that end to truly be a rotation player in the playoffs. I can be proven 100% wrong, but I think he might still be a little bit too one-dimensional when the games really, really matter.
Ty, you guys talked on the show today about the sharpening of the knife or the sharpening of the pencil in a first-round series, meaning the Sixers just need to get themselves in a better place and tighten things up there. Specifically, what places would you like them to tighten up in a first-round series?
Well, the biggest one is transition defense. And that's where the Pacers or the Wizards, because the Wizards do score, that would be an interesting test, because they would actually be forced to have to tighten those things up. It's been a problem. They're the number two defense in all of the NBA, but somehow amongst the worst with transition defense. It doesn't make sense. And the playoffs still tend to be more of a half-court game, but the game has changed, and we don't know what these playoffs, every playoff has its own personality, its own story to tell, and we don't know what the story is going to be just yet. We're coming off of this, pandemic shortened season. So for me, that's the number one thing. And then the other part is I want to see bench execution down the stretch. In addition to the team got into some bad habits, the bench unit specifically, I think Doc's still going to go with it, at least to start. They struggled. There was times where the starters might get you an 18-point lead, and in 3 or 4 minutes, the bench was minus 12, minus 14. Can somebody really, can George Hill perhaps really take hold of that bench and get them to a point where things are really under control? So those are the two biggest things for me. Starters, I honestly believe the starting five is going to be okay. I think there was some boredom there. I think there was some complacency due to they knew what the standings were. I truly believe that. But I'm worried about transition defense from everybody and just the bench to be able to tread water, meaning if they get a five-point lead and they come in, when they leave, is it still a five-point lead? I don't need them to build. I just need them to tread water. If they can get back to that, this team can do things, I think.
And, Ty, final one for me. If we talk about the starters and what they do, we know the story going in, and all eyes will be on him. Ben Simmons, what do you want realistically from him to at least start things off and we can reevaluate it as it goes along? But round one, Ben Simmons, what do you want?
What I want from Ben Simmons in round one is aggression. Now, we've seen it in the first round before. His first playoff series against Miami, when he was a rookie, he was exemplary as far as getting to the basket, attacking. Joel Embiid didn't play for a lot of that series because he had the orbital bone fracture from the ghost of Markelle Fultz headbutting him in the head. But I need aggression from him. And if I look at the Pacers or Washington, they don't really have a player that can guard him. Brogdon, as good as he is, can't guard him. And no one on Washington can guard anybody. Mm-hmm. No excuses. So he's got to be aggressive. I'm not going to ask him to shoot. I'm not asking him to do anything that we haven't seen with our own eyes. But I need him to be aggressive. It would be really refreshing if Joel Embiid was able to average 20 in the first round, for example, instead of 30. Not that I don't want the big man to go do his thing, but if Ben Simmons is aggressive and they're getting downhill on teams, that's when the team is, to me, at their best. And then they can crush almost anybody when Ben really has it going. That's what I want to see. I need aggression from him right away. And if he needs to be the primary at times and Joel Embiid needs to take a step back because we know he has the ability to get his, I'm all for it, especially early. That's what I would like to see. Where Embiid is averaging 20 versus 30 because Ben's doing so much, that would be very encouraging for me personally early in the playoffs.
All right, Ty, who are they playing in the first round, and what is your prediction for that first round?
They're going to play the Pacers, I believe, the most complete team, and I think it's going to be a rest factor. And I'm going to pick them in five. It could be six, but I'm going to pick them in five because I think they're just better. But I'm leaving it open that it could be six, but I'm going to say Pacers, Sixers in five.
All right, you got it. Tyrone Johnson, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us on Beers with Bob Ty.
Thanks,
much appreciated.
Thanks so
much. We'll listen to you guys tomorrow on the Mike Missanelli Show tomorrow afternoon. All right, two things that Ty brought up. One thing you brought up to Ty that I want to hit on, but here's another thing.
Yes.
He was talking about Furkan Korkmaz, and that could be trouble, and I understand exactly what he's saying. You have a great point that if they play Indiana, a team that's not very good defensively, you could probably look to get a guy like Korkmaz, maybe even a Maxey. You can look to get those guys a little confidence out on the floor against a bad defensive team.
That's my point.
Here's another thing. another way, and Ty correctly is worried about Korkmaz's defense.
Yep.
Do we remember the zone that was thrown against the Indiana Pacers earlier this year?
They've been holding it and holding it and holding it, possibly until they get back to the playoffs.
I agree. And what's great about it, you put Matisse Thybulle, you put Ben Simmons up front in that zone. 2-3 zone, and you have Korkmaz in a back, you are hiding that man. And there's not much he has to do there. He is hidden defensively because teams are spending a good, once the ball comes across court, 10 seconds trying to figure out how to get the ball to where it wants to be, past the Ben Simmons and past a Matisse Thybulle, because they are that good defensively. Thybulle's the best zone defensive player I've ever seen in the NBA. So I think that is something that you seriously look at, and you can tone it in this playoff series, maybe. You've done it before against Indiana. You tone it, you get Korkmaz some confidence, and maybe, just maybe, against a tough defensive team like New York, if that's who you advance to, and he's playing well defensively, he's playing well on a defensive unit as such, then his shooting is still there, and then maybe you can ride that out a little
and
bit.
And you know his minutes, the numbers won't be that high, so you're just looking at some good minutes, high volume of scoring, knocking down, stretching it, and taking some of the attention from everywhere else. And when they do zone you also, because you can't stop the big fella, you're going to need shooters out there. Someone's going to be off.
Right.
They're not all going to be on at the same time. So if Green is struggling and you decide you want to put Shake Milton out there and he's not hitting, you're probably going to go a little bit deeper if you feel like Furkan, I need 5 minutes. Can you do something within this zone right here to break this up a bit? Let's go on a 7-2 run, force a timeout. Now we're up 8. And let's get this thing rolling.
Exactly.
And then you bring the other guys back in. So I look at that, and Tyrone is right. Absolutely. But this is also a thing where you can look at the other side, as he agreed with, that you can regain some confidence by knocking down just a few shots. We're not asking him to go out there and get 24. But if he does, fantastic. We've seen it before. We saw it in the two games where he went nuts and everybody's going crazy in Philadelphia.
Sure.
Where Korkmaz can do that. So can he do it? Will he be Marco Bellinelli in the first round? Possibly. The second round against Boston, maybe that's a problem. But until we get there, I think he will be a part of things in the first round against Indiana or against Washington as well, just because he can shoot the ball and stretch the floor a little bit. And by the way, in the zone defense, Matisse Thybulle, I agree with you. But if they allowed it when Iverson was playing, the way he played the passing lanes,
yeah,
that would have been nasty, too.
Yeah, that would have been fun. That would have been his anticipation
exactly.
skills. And when you don't have to worry about a guy, as you know, man skills defensively, worrying about a guy cutting through a lane, keeping him away from the ball, getting between him and the ball at all times, where you're just playing a position and the ball.
Yeah, Theo's got that.
Yeah, that's
Theo's got that.
No, you're
East
right.
Snow's got that.
You're right. And
I'm gambling.
The greatest thing about Thybulle is I would compare at an early, very early stage, his anticipatory skills to someone like an Iverson. Like, his anticipatory skills
yes.
are... and. He's got way more length.
Yes.
So, ballsy that Allen probably couldn't have gotten to, Thybulle's getting a piece of. So, he's fun to watch. And so, that zone defense, I wanted to bring that up to you because it was prominent when they played Indiana earlier in the year. Doc kind of put it in his back pocket. We had him on. I asked him about it. He giggled. This was, about a month or so ago. And kind of didn't want to talk about it. So, it's kind of the little stash you have put aside that you know it's there. And you know it's really good. But you don't want to show it to everybody.
I remember when they said it after they showed us that they hadn't practiced. They just kind of threw it out there. Well, that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
I'm sure it has been practiced a little bit with whatever time that they've had. And now with this coming up, with this week off already with
before
games,
I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm sure they've tried to at least throw something in there.
You always map out, as you know, you always map out something in practice, whether it's a 15-minute thing. Let's just go over this for a little bit. Well, I'm sorry, if you're Doc Rivers and you go over it, probably the first time he went over it, and he threw Matisse Thybulle and Ben Simmons out front, I wouldn't be surprised if he went, oh, wow, this is pretty cool.
Change that game.
Yeah, so you got a number one seed, you didn't use it all that. That's why I was surprised when they lost to Miami, the Sixers recently, Miami just kept at it. They kept at the 2-3 zone. They kept doing exactly what they would do if they would play the Sixers. And at one point, I'm texting my friend. I may have texted you, I don't know. I said, I can't believe they're staying in this long.
Mm-hmm.
They're showing the Sixers everything. And the Sixers gave up. They weren't playing to win that game after about the first 7 minutes.
Yep.
I was really surprised at what they did there. But they're not on the road to to the path to the Eastern Conference Final, it doesn't appear. All right, here's one something else I got to bring up to you, Devon, because you brought it up. You brought up the elephant in the room to Tyrone, and I'll read you some numbers. And I brought this up the other day. 15-8-7, 55% from the floor, 12-10 record in the playoffs. He did not play last year. Ben Simmons' first year in an NBA playoffs, won a series and then lost a series. His second year in an NBA playoffs, his second year in the league, they won a series and they lost on the quadruple bounce to the eventual champions. For the talk to be, and I told you this, I think, before the show, that a caller on Mike's show said, if Ben doesn't perform this playoff series, should he be shipped? The guy's played 2 years of playoff basketball here. Are we really talking about that?
Well, I think the conversation will be strong if that does happen, if he doesn't play well and they're knocked out, especially if they're not advancing to the Eastern Conference Finals. I think the talk will be there. Will that be inside the Sixers walls at the complex in Camden? Maybe. I don't know. Who's going to make the phone call to offer something up? So we'll see. But 18 playoffs against Miami, I thought arguably he was the best player on the floor.
Right.
They won that series in five. Same thing in Brooklyn against
after game
in 19
one.
After game one, where he was pitiful and Jimmy Butler was the best player on the floor and he tried his hardest to get them that win in game one. Ben Simmons throughout the remainder of the series was arguably the best player on the floor. But then you get the second rounds. So the numbers are great, the 15 and 55% and all that that he's done. But I also saw what I saw in those second rounds. So for me, as it has been, no matter, and I say this, no matter who would have been here, Harden, Lowry,
right,
anybody that they would have brought in, it was still going to be all about Simmons and Embiid in the playoffs.
Sure.
Kind of redeeming those second round losses, trying to kind of get that off of their backs. And Tobias Harris to a certain extent, again, because of the Toronto series. But for the most part, I want to see him better in the next round. I saw him against those round one opponents. He was tremendous. He showed some flashes. Game six against Toronto.
Right.
He was fantastic. They blew Toronto out, and they gave them a chance to win in game seven. But I wanted him to be that same player in game seven that I saw in game six, and it was so frustrating. And that's what I remember most. That's what I last saw. He just has to be better in those later rounds. Round one, he might even coast in round one because of how much better they are against these two opponents that they're going to be possibly facing on Sunday. It's really about round two for me, for him, and what he needs to do. If he's all about team like we think he is,
right,
sometimes you have to change things up that you're comfortable with in order to help the team win, which maybe you're a little uncomfortable doing.
You and I are on the same on the same page. What I think is, after 2 years of being in the playoffs, and it was his rookie season, and it's not like he was in his fifth year in his first round of playoffs. I think he was exactly where he should have been. All right, he's been in four playoff series. Okay, didn't play last year. I agree with you that this year it has to rise up. It has to rise up. And it starts with, like I made the boxing analogy earlier, he's got to be on his toes. He's got to be moving. He's got to be jabbing. He's got to be, he's got to have that energy right off the bat. You brought up the first game against the Nets that year where the team got booed. He came out next game, got the opening tap, ran to the rim and dunked. And it was like, whoa, he's not messing around. And it was after he said, oh, you guys are going to be like that. You're not with us. You're against us. That kind of thing. All right, that's what you need from him right off the get-go, because I think that makes your team, again, it's like you and I talk about, I don't care about the other team. First thing I do is I look at what are the Sixers like? What do they look like? Care about that team first, and then you make your adjustments to the other team. But if they play like that, aggressive Ben Simmons is the great Ben Simmons. And there is no question about that
in my
mind.
If he jumps on the team like that, first of all, if he needs that type of motivation, where's it going to come from? Because the fans are not going to jump on him right away. They want to be behind him immediately, and they will. And they're going to win game one. So there may not be much to get on him about with the 8-7 that he might give you in that game with three steals playing 25 minutes. He has to come out there, and you can kind of sense it sometimes where his hair is on fire first tip.
Oh, yeah.
And he has downhill. He has that smoke coming out of his nose like that emoji he always tweets, and he's going right to the basket. But we know that in the first quarter. We know that at times in the second quarter, what about the later quarters when they might need it?
Exactly.
They might not need it in these first round games, but you're going to need it against that defense that you and Ty were talking about against the Knicks. And if you're matching those three-pointers that Trae Young and Bogdanovich are making, you're going to need his twos with Embiid's twos as well and Harris's
to keep
countering those makes.
Yeah, and defense is something we're going to talk about with Ben Simmons because I think he has improved tremendously since he was last in the playoffs, and he was really good back then. Thanks again for joining us, Beers with Bob. It's me and Devon Givens. We're going to be here till 8 o'clock. Coming up at 7 o'clock, D. Lynam will be joining us to talk about this upcoming series, maybe a little bit around the NBA, what she thinks about the Eastern Conference as a whole. And we're going to get into a whole bunch of other stuff talking Sixers. But right now, I got to talk to golf fans. This weekend, FanDuel, in partnership with Valley Forge Casino, is letting new users place their first bet on the major championship risk-free up to $1,000. You might like the favorites. Rory McIlroy, maybe Dustin Johnson, whoever it might be, you might want to bet on them. Maybe you go for somebody who's a long shot. But all you have to do is place your first bet using promo code BEER, and FanDuel will refund you up to $1,000 back inside credit if you don't win. I love being able to bet on golf on America's number one sportsbook. FanDuel Sportsbook, you know it's the best. I keep telling you this. They have fast payouts. It's so easy to use, and they have great promos all the time. I love that you can bet on just about anything during the golf tournament. I can bet on the winner. I can bet whether somebody makes or doesn't make the cut. There's tons of tournament props. If you're a golf fan, you're going to love it. And even if you aren't, it'll make you have some fun watching. So download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today and sign up using promo code BEER so they know we sent you. Again, that's promo code BEER. Must be 21 or older and present in Pennsylvania. First online real money wager only. Refund issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is Beers with Bob.
Presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. More ways to win.
On 97.5 The Fanatic, Philadelphia.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back. Beers with Bob. Beers with Bob presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. More ways to win. And guess what, Devon? Beers with Bob. That's right. It's going on the road.
Okay.
We're kicking off the summer season on Friday, May 28th from 1 to 4 at Keenan's in North Wildwood. That's right. It's the official opening of the Jersey Shore Party at Keenan's presented by Coors Light. I'll be there at the official opening of the Jersey Shore. We're going to go from 1 to 4. We have Beers with Bob. The only way to get in is to win tickets. And you know how to do that? Well, you got to go to 975thefanatic.com to register now. Tickets sold out like that, Devon. There was a rumor that you were going. Boom. Tickets sold out immediately.
Oh, that's what it was?
Yeah, so okay. We don't know if you're going or not, but we're not telling anybody. So that'll be a fun way to start the Memorial Day weekend. Are you a big Memorial Day weekend type of guy?
I am. To relax and, you know, have a nice little barbecue, get together with the crew. Yeah, absolutely.
What's your favorite season?
Favorite season. It's probably 4th of July.
Is it?
Yeah.
All right, so summertime.
Holiday, summertime. The summertime overall is my favorite. I don't like the cold. I think you know that. So that's where I am, summertime.
I'm summer all the way.
Yeah, summertime.
I love the summer. But you know what season D. Lynam likes best?
What's that?
Playoff season.
Playoff season?
Playoff season is D's. That's her go-to season. And we have her on the line right now. D. Lynam, what's happening?
Well, Bob, come on, let's be honest. Playoffs and then 1A would be golf season.
Yes, but for now we're going to just go with the playoffs.
Very true.
Did you play golf today?
I did. I just finished.
Uh-huh. So she's sitting on the back. She's sitting on the back deck at her local course, which I will not mention. I imagine you probably have your shoes untied, clubs are put away.
No? I'm like fresh off.
Oh, okay.
Oh, nice.
All right.
Yeah.
Who did you play with today? Anybody we know?
I just finished with Mr. Dunphy, actually.
Good old Fran Dunphy. Yeah. Wow, tell him we said hello. He's a big fan of the show. I don't know if he knew that or not, but I'm just saying that he is. So, D, we're getting into some serious Sixers playoff talk here. And I asked Yvonne at the beginning of the show, and I'm anxious to ask you this, too. The season ended the way it did, where they played bad teams. Doc Rivers admitted that today on these airwaves. It was a bad row of games that they had. They did what they had to do, and they came out of it. I don't think they extracted a whole lot out of it. And Doc said pretty much the same thing. Where's your confidence level with this team right now?
You know what? Because he is their leader and because he identifies that, you know, they had slippage at the end of their season and that they're addressing it. And they kind of have a mini training camp, if you will, between the end of the season because you have this play-in tournament that's happening. And so I actually am pretty confident. I would say over the last 2 days, the two people's names who came up the most was Doc and his culture that he established, his winningness, his ability to identify what they have, what they need to work on, what they can build on. And then the other name was Danny Green. I mean, the respect Danny Green has from his teammates for being a winner and being able to articulate to his teammates things that they need to be on the lookout for what's ahead. I found it to be a lot of respect for those two guys in the conversations the last 2 days.
Dee, all the conversations you and I have had all season long in the post following these games, we would go over a bevy of things that were good and sometimes bad, totaling up the 49 wins that they ended up with on this campaign. But I kind of go back to the playoffs that we've seen this team in over the last couple of years and knowing that now we are in a different spot. Everything just feels different. So I wanted to ask you, you know, what feels different about this team that makes you believe that they can go in there and make some noise at least by the time they get to the Eastern Conference Finals and see what they do once they step in it?
Well, I think they have more confidence in the way that they play. I mean, that's just truth. You know, one of the articles I was reading, and I wish I could remember who wrote it, and I thought it was great. But, you know, everybody spent the last couple of years saying how once they got to be a good team, you know, Joel and Ben can't play together, right? They both have to be in the paint. And Doc basically addressed to both of them, that's not true. This can be an advantage, right? Because if you go to the paint, Ben, and Joe's there too on the low block, his guy has to make a choice. He's either coming to double you or stop you, and now you're passing to Joe. And if he's going to stay with Joe because he knows what Joe can do, then you got a layup. And just the mentality change that instead of everybody saying they can't play together, Doc found a way to convince them you can play together the way that you are, the way that you are. And I think that's a big difference. And then the fact that they went and got people who could shoot. I think one of the numbers that I had not seen before was what they, and I don't know what I should be calling the number, but let's just say it was 14.1 when the two of them played with J.J. Redick. And when they were without him, it dropped to 3.1, right? So shooters, it was so obvious that they needed shooting. Daryl Morey and Doc obviously knew that, and they went and got them shooters. So I think those two things combined makes for a totally different confidence going into the postseason.
Dee, I was talking earlier about it seems like when Seth Curry and Danny Green are at their best is when the team is moving and they can get out and they find their spots and they flare out and they're great at catching and shooting and Seth can obviously create a little bit off the dribble. How important, obviously the big three are what this team is about and many teams have three, but how important are those guys? Is it one of those guys that have to go off, in your opinion, each game, or just be both of them be kind of sidebars to the main stories that is the big three?
Well, for me, it's sidebars and consistent. So I don't need you to go off, but I do need you. You cannot have a 2-for-10 night front. Maybe you could in the first round because you're going to be that much better than your opponent, in my opinion. But after that, I think everything's going to, you know, this is a team that you need those role guys to be exactly that. They cannot be going up and down once the postseason starts. And I think that was one of the things yesterday that Tobias had kind of hinted at when I was trying to find out, like, what some changes in the play. You know, we talk so much regular season is so different than playoff. And one of the things that he pointed out, like, everything is, the speed is greater. The people are tougher. The help coming from the weak side is faster. So you need to be making quicker decisions, and you need to be at your best. You need to be ready to take it up a notch. And I think they identify with that. But I think I think they can be, you know, who they are, but I need you to be consistently who you're supposed to be.
And with that consistently being who you're supposed to be, you led me right into a guy that we have yet to really discuss, and that is Tobias Harris. The last time we saw him, of course, in at 18 specifically, pardon me, 19 against Toronto, that series not so great last year in the bubble, didn't perform well, had a terrible fall where we think he had a concussion and he came back out and played anyway. But, you know, he was one of your favorite players this year. D, how important is he with the overall success? Do we need the 22, or do we need just something a little bit differently, but the consistent and the fact that he is shooting at a very good number versus having a high number of point total for this team?
Yeah, right. Well, I think you might need I need him to shoot well from the outside. I mean, he needs to get rid of that demon, in my opinion. 2 years ago, that was awful what he did, shooting from three. Mm-hmm. He had one game, but the rest of it was not good. But again, I think he, when you listen to him now, he doesn't sound like he's afraid of being the guy that we saw the last 2 years. So to answer your question about, I think there are going to be games where if you so concentrate on Joe and somebody might make that choice, dare somebody else to beat them, then Tobias is going to have to be that guy that scores a high number. But I think it's really going to come from how do people decide to guard Joel. And we all know that through the course of the series that, you know, they're going to try different things depending on what works, and game to game people make, you know, adjustments. And that's half the fun of these 7-game series. So I think, Devon, we are going to see Tobias have to, on occasion, have one of those high numbers. I just think that's true. Like, I look at that Boston game last night. You know, I mean, can you ask Tatum to score 50 regularly in that Brooklyn series? No. Yeah. But who came to play with him? Kemba had a good game. Tristan Thompson came off the bench with 12-12. You know, so you got to, like, feel the game out. And I think we're going to see some good games from Tobias. I really do.
And I wanted to address this with you and Bob both going off of the Tobias thing and continue what you just said about what he said about the playoffs and the difference with the regular season. Sometimes, and I'm guilty of this, now I know you guys have covered it, and sometimes you hear things differently than what they are saying. I hear stuff that Tobias Harris says, and sometimes I'm like, do I believe it?
Do you understand
what I'm saying?
Yeah. I totally do.
Yeah.
Because he wants
It sounds
to,
great.
Yeah.
Right.
He wants to say the right things, and I think he is a genuine person. I have to say,
100%.
I would be wrong in not saying that.
100%.
But is he trying to convince himself is what I think you're kind of alluding to in some of the things that he says. But I just feel like with Doc as their leader, and I think he, in a good way, has challenged them to look at things, look at yourself, analyze things, look at your play, and then, like, you know, let's move on from it. Let's identify and let's go. And I think because Tobias has played for him before, that's one reassuring thing for me personally. Of, you know, what Doc's not afraid to challenge Tobias, and he's not afraid to say, you know, you're dribbling too much, or, I mean, he'll say that even in post games. So I think for the reasons that if he gets in moments where he's just trying to convince himself to do the right thing or be as good as he hopes he can be, that Doc's the right guy to be leading him in those moments.
Bob, D. Lance, the Tobias stuff, I agree. I think he and Doc are on the same level.
Okay.
Of thinking where he brought out the best in him. And we had Doc on right as the season started, and he said, I pulled Tobias aside and I said, why aren't you going to do left hand anymore? Yeah. So that's the best thing you can do. I think they have that kind of a level of, and where Tobias is kind of, I don't have to be the, I hear what you're saying, because oftentimes he does say stuff and it's so cookie cutterish that you're like, you wonder if he's just going through the motions.
Because we hear players say stuff and you're like, I believe it.
Yeah.
And then there are others who you're like, yeah, maybe not so much.
So you hate Tobias Harris is what you're saying?
Not so much.
Yeah. Okay. All right, D, last thing I got to ask you before we let you go here and maybe go practice your putting a little bit.
I just parred the 18th hole. What are you talking
about? Ah, there you go. So the rotation of the defense, I think it's still a little bit up in the air. Doc was on here today and said, look, I could go 10, 11 deep, or I could go 8 deep, yet to be determined. What is your expectations out of the bench? How do you think it's going to play out for the playoffs?
Well, you know, I'm a big believer that 8 is usually what the good teams go with. And part of that reason, Bob, is because you want your Joel Embiids, your Tobiases, and your Ben on the floor. And unless you're blowing somebody out, I mean, you want your best guys out there as much as possible. So if you're trying to go 10, 11 deep, I don't think you can afford as you proceed through the playoffs, because the talent is greater, the play is tougher. So, but Doc he's been very firm in saying that he feels that confidence in his bench. Personally, here's what I say. We know that Danny and George Hill and Feibel, you know, these guys you need. I think Shake is a guy you need. So to me, it's 9. And Maxi gets spot play. And I didn't even mention Dwight. So I guess it actually is 10 because, you know, I think all those guys you're going to need. Maybe Shake's minutes get less. I don't know. I think he's not afraid to use those guys, but he's going to have to make some tough decisions as you get further in the playoff, I think.
Good problem to have.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, I mean, they're
and
deep.
Bob, one of the things is, like, who of those guys, and I'm sure these conversations have happened, do you have confidence that if I can't give you minutes in game 2, but all of a sudden I'm in a situation in game 3 that I need you, has he prepared them to be not in the role that they've had in the regular season, but can I count on you in spot minutes? Because that's what the good teams are able to do.
And that's the great mind of D-Lineham right there, because Doc Rivers said the exact same thing on the Mike Missanelli show today, that if there's guys he has to go to that he didn't go to previously, he has to keep them ready and has to keep them ready to go, because there are going to be specialty situations. Mm-hmm. D, we thank you so much for joining us from Rolling Green today. You're a good person. I'm glad you parred that last hole. And
thank you, sir.
I, you know, just because I have a little bit of coach in me, I say go hit the putting green and just get a few in.
Okay.
Just
that's true. It's always a good thing.
All right.
I love running the three-man league with you, too.
Always.
All right. Thanks, D. Have a good one. We really appreciate it. D. Lineham on the... I hit the wrong button, Ty.
That's all right. And look, I don't mean... I think Tobias will take this personally with what he did in the past. The regular season is with the regular season. He remembers the playoffs, too. He doesn't forget things.
Yeah.
If you know who he is. And I don't mean it in that way. I mean it in the way of... Sometimes I'm just like, all right, I understand you're a leader. I want you to just go out there and show.
Yeah.
And certain guys make you feel comfortable when they say things. He says all the right things.
Sure.
Just go out there and I want to see it.
Yeah.
I want to see it.
Doc was talking about him today on Mike's show, and he said, look, the guy's a straight line dude. When he goes straight line to the basket and he does what he does, Doc Rivers said this.
No side to side.
And look, you and I have covered Doc a while. Back to his days in Boston, you and I were covering the Sixers. We've seen him a lot. We saw him through the playoff series.
Mm-hmm.
Doc doesn't BS. Like, Doc doesn't say stuff that Doc doesn't believe, good or bad. And he said today on my show, he's a straight line guy. And when I got him, when we talked about it before the season started, he is pretty much unstoppable in this league when he is doing that. You think about that. All our focus goes to Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, and rightfully so. But when you have a coach that really believes that the third option, we can argue second, third option offensively.
Offensively, but, yeah, second, yeah.
Right. Tobias Harris is pretty much unstoppable in this league. That's a great feeling that you have to have.
No east-west stuff with him. That's not his game.
No.
It's north-south, back-to-the-basket things, where you have a smaller defender, and you go to work. And he has enough in his offensive game where it doesn't have to be pretty, it doesn't have to be cute, but the results will say what the results will say, and it leads to a win. And that's the right approach to the game. So I look at him. He's going to be important, man. He's going to be important. If Simmons is in distributor mode and running this offense, Harris has to score.
Yeah.
He's going to have to score to help alleviate some of that pressure off of Joel Embiid. We saw it during the regular season. If the knee holds up, he has to give you what we saw.
I just blink my eyes and see him constantly, and I said this when he first came here, as a 9 for 15 from the floor, 4 foul shots, 22 points, whatever it may be, 25, just almost consistently every night, and it's easy for him to do. Now, playoffs, as you said, and they are, it's a different situation. It's a different animal. But I never saw it so easy from him as I did this year. I mean, he scored easily.
He was comfortable.
That's a great line. He was comfortable.
He was very comfortable. The only thing when we talk about flashing back to things, I flash back to the Indiana game last Tuesday. He and Ben Simmons on the fast break. It was a 2-on-1 or 2-on-2. Simmons, like he typically does, he drew the first defender, but he gave the ball to Harris on the right wing, and I just saw Harris go up a little weak. And I'm like, I cannot have.
Yeah.
I need you to go up stronger. If you're not going to get the basket, you're going to the free throw line.
Right.
And what he did was kind of shy away from it, and Embiid didn't play in that game. So it was those two. And I remember that, and I still carry that, fairly or not. I saw it. And I wouldn't allow it to stick with me again if I didn't see it before. And I'm like, I'm hoping he's not reverting back to things that I didn't like in the past, where he is not absorbing the contact, getting the bucket, or just getting the free throws and making it a positive play instead of then turning around, looking at the official and complaining about it.
All right, so on the lines of Tobias Harris, staying kind of with that theme, but we saw it with Miami, and you and I talked about it the next morning. I don't think we could talk to each other quick enough because we wanted to dissect. When they lost to Miami, Miami did a really interesting thing that I brought up earlier in the beginning of the show, was that they waited for Joel Embiid to put the ball on the floor, and then they threw the double team at him. One of the things Doc Rivers did wonderfully early this season was, and he told us, I taught Joel that when he gets the ball, turn and face the defense and see what's what. And if it comes, get rid of it and get it back, and then you're one-on-one. Or if you see it coming and you got an opening, take it. You know, just little things that we didn't see before. We saw back downs and in the Brett Brown offense and strips and, you know, tough double teams. We saw that a little more against Miami. So Joel Embiid's going to get doubled in the playoffs. Maybe not the same way Miami did, but he's going to get doubled. What's the most important thing when he gets doubled to you in this offense?
Outside of him recognizing it and finding where the ball needs to go?
Yeah.
I'm saying his teammates recognizing that he might be in trouble, making themselves available. So it's that quick, oh, there it is. Let me cut to the middle of the painted area and catch the basketball. If I'm at the top of the key and it's a bad angle for him, slide a little bit to your left where he has an easier pass to you instead of trying to throw a cross court. Therefore, right. It's a cross court pass. It's now intercepted in the middle. Somebody takes a stupid foul to stop the fast break. Now you have another individual foul and a team foul, all because you didn't do what you weren't supposed to do on the offensive side. So I think it's more of his teammates identifying where he is, knowing what some of his tendencies are when he gets in trouble, making yourself available. Show yourself when he's in trouble.
And I'll tell you what, if they do get Indiana in the first round, I would love for the Sixers to take a page out of their offense. They run a great high-low. They run beautiful backdoors. When Sabonis has the ball up top and your focus is on him and doubles do come because he's double-worthy now, he is great and guys are great at finding openings. It never happens enough to me with Joe. There's two things that don't happen enough for my liking with Joel Embiid. One is when he is up at the top of the key and getting doubled. Yes, flare outs are always there and guys are always posted around the 3-point line. I would love to see Ben Simmons on the move going to a basket. Tell me who's going to stop a 6'11 guy running to a basket, gets a pass and go up in one motion and try to score. We don't see that enough off of a pass to Ben Simmons for my liking.
Embiid likes the ball on his right side on the low block,
right,
when he receives his pass. So when he turns around over that shoulder, if Simmons is coming baseline because he's really not a threat from the top, if he's not going to be posted up to your point at the top of the key there, right, for the high-low, if he is roaming that baseline, we've seen Embiid bullet pass it to him because he sealed his man,
yeah,
Simmons, underneath the basket where it's almost impossible for them to stop him. So the only way to stop him is to foul him and send him to the free throw line. But if he's already in the motion of going up and layup, dunk it, whatever right, it might right. be. That's a basket.
Yeah.
That's, and again, that's on Simmons to make himself available along the baseline. Or, and I've said this, I know I've talked to you about it, it drives me nuts. People don't understand what I'm saying because they yell at me. He's not Draymond Green. But when Draymond Green gets the ball, free throw line extended right at the nail area, where, right there, all he does is turn, take one dribble. It would be a lob to Iguodala, a lob to Andrew Bogut, yep. Sean Livingston, whatever it is. That's a positive play.
Yeah.
That's a positive play. And if he's going to pass it and that's what he wants to do, that's a good play to make, especially if you're coming off of a double team with Embiid. They're now scrambling.
Yep.
And if you don't want to make that lob, once you get it with a full head of steam going down the painted area, someone's going to collapse on you, and now you can kick it out to that corner, to that wing for that other three-point option that you might have available to you.
That was exactly
basketball 101.
The second thing that exactly I was going to say that we don't see enough of is the lob in the lane with the first unit.
We don't see lobs on this team.
Well, Dwight Howard.
Dwight Howard. Yeah.
And I wish Joel Embiid.
In 5 years. Dwight Howard is the first one to catch a lob
ever. I wish Joel Embiid would take a page out of Dwight Howard's book and learn how to roll and get those open.
Oh, my goodness.
But he doesn't jump as well as Dwight
Howard. That's a different type of leap.
Yes, it is.
That's a natural leap.
He doesn't.
Not like that.
Yeah, people make fun of me when I say Joel can't jump.
No.
Like, you don't understand. Joel can't jump. You watch how many times he jumps and he actually gets off the floor. It's not very many.
Jump. No.
It's not very many
at all. That's a different jump.
Yeah.
Simmons is the jumper.
Exactly. Yes. And I'd like to see him explode a little bit more, too. Forget the pitter-patter of the two-footed stop. I don't want to see that. Explode off of one foot.
One foot.
Right
Hammer.
Foot, left hand, left foot, right hand.
Give them what they
get
left
it done.
For.
Tyler, we're getting pumped up here. We're getting a little bit late for a break. Thank you for joining us. Beers with Bob, me and Devon Givens. When we get back at 7:30, Crystal Rich is going to join us from Sixers Outsiders. Let us know what her thoughts are on the Sixers' future playoff run. Time at the Fanatic 724.
This is Beers with Bob.
Presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. More ways to win.
On 97.5 The Fanatic, Philadelphia.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Beers with Bob. Welcome back. Bob Cooney, Devon Givens. Tyler Zuli making us look good behind the glass, which is not an easy task. Devon, actually, it is.
But
making me look halfway decent is not good.
No.
So Tyler is earning his money tonight. And on the line, our final guest of the night from Sixers Outsiders. We have the famous.
Who's that?
No good?
Yeah, I'm good. What's up, guys? Bob, Devon. What an intro. Always appreciate it. How you guys doing?
Doing well.
Are you kicking back and having the cocktail with Beers with Bob? Or are we, you know, taking it easy tonight or what?
Well, you know what? I actually have to cover a Rutgers spring game tomorrow up in Piscataway. So I'm switching gears a little bit and doing some college football work.
Nice. But it doesn't preclude you.
I wish I could have a beer.
It doesn't preclude you from talking Sixers basketball, and that's what we are here to do with you tonight.
Yes.
And the basic question I'm asking everybody, Crystal, is coming off the past couple of seasons where heartbreak was the playoffs, coming off of the end of this season where you kind of just guided into that number one seed and the last 10, 12 games of the season weren't all that great, but you didn't have great opponents, where are you with this team right now? How do you feel?
Well, you know what, Bob? I feel pretty good. And I think that you have seen this unit at full power be really good. And yeah, you're right. Doc spoke about that earlier where the last couple of games in the regular season, they weren't that challenging. The starting five, they weren't playing a four-quarter game. So I'm very thankful that we have this week to really just clean stuff up. And I think that is the biggest thing and the biggest almost gift, if you will, that the Sixers do have. because there are quite a few things that I believe the Sixers could be much better at if they just had a few extra minutes to practice. Like, they haven't had all that much time this season with the crazy schedule.
Well, yeah, and now we see that they actually have that opportunity. So how important, as you just talked about, how important is it for them to have that practice time going in round one, still waiting to find out who the opponent is, to do something that they haven't been able to do, which is get some necessary work in, fill in some of the cracks that they need to, as you talk about, not as a perfect team, as they get ready for their opponent?
It's crucial because, you know, the playoffs are just a different beast, and there are several things that need to be cleaned up or even added to the arsenal of what they can do. So we all know about the transition defense, and you guys have talked about that. There also needs to be off-ball movement addressed and having more cutting, having more back doors available. So there's more things going on offensively. I would also love to see this team in this week off that they had being very strategic about creating mismatches, and that's from selling the screen to slipping and picking a person on the defense that they want to, or picking a person that they want to expose defensively who may not be a good defender. And those are certain things that I would love to see Doc implement into the system, and I've seen it against us. The Sixers will they'll expose certain of our players, like, for example, a Korkmaz who's not the best defender. The teams will come out and try to expose him. I would like for the Sixers to control more of their own destiny. And you know what, Devon, if you rewind the clock back to Danny Green and his time with the Lakers, this is something that Frank Vogel would do all the time. I remember watching that final series, and there was a one player that they chose. They were very cognizant to pick on. They were being the bullies, and that person was Duncan Robinson of the Heat. They would get him, and whoever Duncan was guarding, that person would screen for LeBron, creating that mismatch where Duncan would then have to guard LeBron, and you know the end of that story because he can't guard a LeBron. So I would love the Sixers to take that week to clean up not only transition defense, off-ball movement, but to add little things like that to their arsenal.
Something, it's funny you bring that up. That's something that Boston did against the Sixers in Ben Simmons' first year playing, the first series that
18.
He played in 18. They just picked the Sixers to death, and they got the mismatch they wanted, and they just went from there. Sometimes playoff basketball is just that easy. But, Crystal, once we get past the big three on the Sixers, once you get past Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, and Tobias Harris, what are you looking for from this team to supplement what those three will give you, specifically offensively?
Yeah, well, you know, you gotta first look at your other two starters in Danny Green and Seth Curry, and you always have to account for not every single night they're not gonna come out and light things up and be on fire. We saw that throughout the regular season where sometimes there's a little bit of inconsistency, right? But I don't think that we should allow that to scare us too much, because Danny Green's IQ is just way too high for us to not realize his under the radar value. And I spoke about just being able to screen. Danny Green, he's such a veteran at being able to sell the screen, like coming up, pretend he's going to screen so his defender will slip off. He would slip into the corner and shoot where he is best from, that corner three. So, of course, you're looking at those two guys right there to come up big. The original sin of last season was not surrounding Ben Simmons with shooters, so it'll be great to see how that plays off in the playoffs. And then when you go to the bench, you kind of don't know exactly what Doc is going to do specifically in the first and even the second round. You know, Dwight, Matisse, George Hill, they're all going to get some time, but the Sixers bench, they're full of kind of role players in their own way. Not all the players are two-way players. Like Matisse Thybulle is a young, going to be a defensive specialist. Korkmaz is a guy who likes to shoot the three and occasionally euro to the basket. So I think right there, that's going to be the most interesting thing to see is which players Doc utilizes in which matchup. So you got to go with the three that you know, Dwight, Thiessen, and George Hill for now.
And Crystal, you mentioned the coaching. And in the past, we've talked about the Sixers losing in the playoffs, and oftentimes the finger will be pointed back at Brett Brown. There's a change this year with Doc Rivers in there. How much do you attribute winning and losing to coaching? And if so, when you look at this particular scenario now with the change in the leader, how much of a difference will it help the 76ers with Doc Rivers there instead of Brown?
Yeah, I think you have to hold coaches accountable, but you also have to realize they're also not out there playing. So if they are putting their players in good positions and they're just missing shots and they're not executing your game plan properly, that doesn't mean they're not doing their job. So, but I do believe that having Doc Rivers is the best thing that the Sixers can have. And not only because he is, a veteran coach, a former player, but because we know this guy creatively likes to find ways to win. I watched his mini doc on Netflix, and he was talking about when his tenure with the Celtics and him taking a light and shining it at an empty banner space in their arena and saying, like, we need to fill this. And that was one way for him to creatively inspire the team. We won't know these things right now until the playoffs are over, and maybe not even until we win our next championship. But building that culture, all the players talk about it. He makes them want to play better. And not only that, but he surrounded himself with such a good coaching staff like Sam Cassell, who are able to help players with specific things, like Ben Simmons at the line, which he was really good at the beginning of the season, kind of fell off a little bit, but last couple games kind of got it back slightly.
Crystal, prediction time. All right, who do you think the Sixers are going to face in the first round, and what do you think the result will be?
I definitely think it's going to be the Pacers. They're just a way better team. It's going to be a miraculous thing if the Wizards end up being the Pacers, and I'm going to give them in five.
Okay.
I don't want the Sixers to stretch out too much in the first round and take it to six games. I don't think there's a scenario where they push it to seven. But I do. I will give them one game. I believe it's going to be the Pacers, and the Sixers will take the series in five.
All right, now let's carry it further. Where does the Sixers season end this year?
Oh, you guys want to do this to me?
We have to do it. It's in your contract.
My contract. All right, so I believe that right now my concentration is on the Eastern Conference Finals because it's been so long since we've even made it out of the second round. I don't even want to talk about last season in the bubble. But I think that this team has the potential to go to the finals. I'm not going to predict any finals prediction, but my concentration right now is getting to that Eastern Conference Finals and laying it all on the line because whoever that matchup is, potentially Brooklyn, you have to almost be darn near perfect at every aspect of the game. Ben Simmons has to be aggressive. Joel Embiid has to be able to do what he's done earlier in the season, get out of the double team, give you a high-scoring double-double. Danny and Seth both have to be on. Your bench has to be able to hold leads. And once you get to the Eastern Conference Finals, not just hold a lead, but contribute a little bit more. So my concentration is there. But I do believe they have the potential to make it all the way to the finals if they play like we think they can.
All right. Crystal, thank you so much
for joining us.
Everybody can check you out, you and Tyrone, on Sixers Outsiders, of course, after every Sixers game. And continued luck with that.
Yeah, thank you so much, guys. Thanks for having me. And go Sixers.
You got it. Thanks, Chris.
Appreciate it. Do you look at it right now, and do you look at a situation with the playoffs like it is, and let's just stop after the second round? Is that how you kind of look at things when it comes to evaluating, like you said, prediction time? All right, it kind of starts in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Right, yeah.
is that where you, and do you allow yourself, forget about the NBA Finals. It's the Eastern Conference Finals first, then we get to the NBA Finals.
Yeah, I am so, it's funny I ask those questions when I'm not that person. I so don't look.
I know you don't. You go ahead, series by series.
I go day to day, hour to hour, second to second.
But you can't help yourself.
But you can't. I mean, look, the talk has been, and I have an interesting question for you, and I've been anxious to ask you this because I have asked others.
All right.
So the theme of all of this, now that it's played out, is, Sixers, easy path. Right, you have either Indiana or Washington. You should get through them. I agree with that. And then you get the winner of Atlanta and the Knicks. You got that. You don't have to face Milwaukee, Miami, or Brooklyn until the Eastern Conference Final. It couldn't be better, right? Right?
Correct.
Okay.
That's the path.
So
it played out perfectly.
Here's my odd man thinking. whoever comes out of the other side of the bracket, okay? So if it's Milwaukee, they're going to have to go through Miami and Brooklyn. If it's Brooklyn,
I know where you're going.
They're going to have to go past the route that they have, which is Boston and then Milwaukee. Much more formidable than the 76ers. Whoever comes out of that,
battle tested.
They are going to be playing great basketball, Devon.
Battle tested, yes. And that's why I wanted the Sixers to walk in the way that they needed to walk in with the wins. Yeah, Orlando again. But we did see Orlando being the get right team for the Sixers being the Sixers.
Right.
So if the Sixers handle their stuff and they're just like, wow, they're dominant against Washington or Indiana, man, they took apart Atlanta or New York in a way that I didn't see coming, then I would feel much better going in talking about it the way that you are with the other side having the more tougher road. So one way we'll look at it and say, oh, they have the tougher road. They're going to be beat down by the time they get there. Or they're going to be battle tested for when they get there. They're ramping it up and they're going to be in that mode of destroy, destroy, destroy because we just had this tough one. The Sixers might be the easiest. Let's do what we need to do.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because you and I have both played and been around the game for a long time. And you wonder, do you want to go into something playing your best ball or do you want to go in, which is the theme now of rested and healthy and
both? Whatever. Selfish. I want both.
Yeah.
I'm greedy.
I hear you on that. I just wonder, and devil's advocate here, I just wonder, can you come out of two series, say Indiana, say New York, and confident that you're playing your best ball, having beaten two teams that, okay, yeah, they're okay.
And I kind of want New York just because I think that the challenge there with the head coach is a little different.
It's going to be ugly.
Yeah, because it's going to be physical. It's going to be nasty. They're definitely going to take you out. Nate McMillan, very good defensive coach. We know that. They don't necessarily have a defensive team like we've seen the teams put together when he was coaching the Indiana Pacers. So I think New York would be the tougher opponent to gear them up for Milwaukee, Miami, or Brooklyn when they do face them in the Eastern Conference Finals.
It's a good thing. We're talking about who would be the better opponent in the semifinal to get them ready for the finals. Listen to us. Haven't played game one.
They've come a long way.
How many games do they win in this playoffs?
Sixers.
You need 16 to get the title.
Yeah, no. So clearly they'll get the 8. I think they'll get 11.
Ah, Devon has them losing in the Eastern Conference Finals.
I've said it. I can change my mind by the time they get there based on what we see. Today, I just think Brooklyn is the best team in the East.
All right, so let's go through this. Let's do the NBA real quick with you before we have to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And we appreciate you joining us on Beers with Bob, our special edition, playoff edition, 76ers, with myself and Devon Givens. San Antonio, Memphis tonight. Who do you have coming out of that?
I'm going with the coach, Greg Popovich.
Okay. I have no problem with that. Memphis,
yeah.
I love John Morant and whatever. I'm not.
I've seen the Spurs put up 140 points. That's not what they do. So he gets them ready for certain situations. This is a situation where he'll have them ready to
and
go.
He was away from them this past weekend because he went to see Timmy Duncan go into the Hall of Fame. So him returning could be even an added bonus.
Uh-huh.
All right, big one tonight. Golden State, Steph Curry at Los Angeles and LeBron and AD. Who do you like?
I never bet against LeBron James, even though I think Curry can put up a big number. Lakers win.
Okay. So the matchups in the East, you have Indiana beating Washington tomorrow night, and they face the Sixers.
I do.
You got the Sixers coming out of there.
In 5.
Okay. Miami, Milwaukee.
Milwaukee in 6.
Dallas Clippers.
Clippers in 5.
Okay. Boston, Brooklyn.
Brooklyn in 4.
Portland, Denver.
Wow. That's a really good series.
That's a fun series.
That's 7, and I'm going with Denver at home.
Because you also have the best player on the floor, perhaps. I mean, Dame Lillard might turn out to be the best in the series.
Yeah, but this year, Jokic is the MVP.
Right. Okay. And then, Philadelphia series already went through. Atlanta, New York.
New York, 6.
Oof. All right, Lakers, Phoenix. You know that Suns team a little bit.
I do.
Yeah.
I think it goes 7 right now. I'm going to give the edge to Phoenix in 7 because of home.
Okay. San Antonio at Utah?
Utah in 5.
All right, so let's ramp everything ahead. Who's in the finals this year, according to Devon Givens?
Brooklyn and Utah.
And who wins that series? I'll tell you what, that's really interesting. Because you go to Utah, it's a different game there.
Yes, it is.
It is. I'm telling you, I've been there. I've found my jaw open like, oh my God, this is nuts.
Two guys that have been there, though, Durant and Harden.
Yeah.
I give them the edge.
So you got Brooklyn winning this whole thing.
I do.
That's Devon Givens. You can send emails to devon.givens@bbgi.com. Help yourself in doing that. Devon, I could sit and talk hoops with you all night long.
Yeah, this is what we do, man. I always enjoy it. Thank you.
It is the best. No, thank you for joining us, Beers with Bob. And listen, we do. I've gotten some emails. I've gotten some text messages. Fingers crossed.
Yep.
Fingers crossed. We have some things in the work that maybe Devon and I and others, maybe some of the people you heard tonight, will be able to do some stuff for Sixers playoff run. But no matter what, it's going to be exciting. We have some people that are already going to be out at places for watch parties, and we'll be announcing them as the playoffs get closer and all that. But Sunday it starts. Sunday it starts, and this has to be the most anticipated playoff run for the Sixers probably since 2001.
Since 2001. Yeah, I would say since 2001. Quickly, before we let you go, just one question. Game one between the Sixers, the Pacers, Wizards, whoever it is, do they have that slip up or are they ready to go, ready to ramp it up?
They win the opening tap and it goes to Ben Simmons and it's Brooklyn Nets all over again from a couple years ago. He goes hard at the basket and something good happens.
And it
goes downhill.
Game one.
I mean, they play downhill.
They play downhill.
No, it doesn't go downhill. They play downhill and they play well that first game.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think Doc Rivers did a good thing of tightening things up during these practices they've had the last few days.
All right, love it.
Yeah, so Devon Givens is going to carry you throughout the rest of the night along with Tyler. He'll be here until 10 o'clock. We thank you for joining us. We want you to check out tomorrow morning the John Kincaid Show, where I'll be joining obviously John Kincaid and Jamie Lynch and Pat Egan. We're going to have a bunch of Sixer stuff. We're going to do some preview of the teams that they may face in the first round, which of course is Washington and Indiana. You got Devon for the rest of the night. Check out everybody else. We got Tyrone on with Mike Messineau in the afternoon show. We thank Ty for joining us, and obviously join Andrew and Anthony for the Cuz Show in middays. Once again, thanks for joining us. Beers with Bob. We'll be back at you next Wednesday, probably 6 to 7, but we'll see. There could be a change in the lineup. We don't know. We're flexible. Thanks for joining us. Time at the Fanatic 752.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.